Hello, my friends, and welcome back to your favorite podcast, Strange Origins. As you probably already know, I am your host, Paige Wolstenhue. I am the writer, the editor, and the voice of this little project. I want to start off by thanking all of you for the support you've given me this year. I've talked to a lot of people, both in person and through social media, that have told me just how much they love what I've been doing. And it's always the best part of my day to hear that someone enjoyed learning about the same things that I do, and that they want more episodes. So, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. For this second season, I have a lot planned, including subjects that I know you've contemplated the origin of at least once. These will include the fan favorite creature features, such as werewolves and hags, and more intangible concepts, such as soul theft and even past lives. I would also like to let you know that this year's Halloween episode will be released the day before the 31st, and will be all about the history of Halloween itself. That way, you can tell everyone where all of our weird traditions originated, such as trick-or-treating or bobbing for apples. I plan on releasing episodes at midnight, Mountain Daylight Time, between Thursday and Friday every week, meaning if you're a night owl like me, you can listen during the witching hour. Or if you have a morning commute like everyone else, you can listen on your way to work. Of course, you can always just binge listen while cleaning the house or baking pumpkin chocolate chip cookies and sending them to me. Before getting into this week's episode, I would also like to remind and inform everyone of the fact that my Patreon is up and running at patreon.com/strangeorigins. The link will always be listed in my episode descriptions. For a monthly subscription, I will be doling out fantastic tokens of my appreciation of you as a patron of this podcast and other projects of mine. This ranges from your name being read aloud on the podcast to special merchandise such as stickers, totes, and hoodies, to an exciting new mini-podcast that I will be producing here soon. The podcast is called Strange Origins American Mythos, and will include 25 episodes describing one different myth across every state of the United States. From the Dark Watchers of California to the Spectre Moose of Maine. Everyone that donates from $3 and up will have exclusive access to the episodes as soon as they air. Also, be sure to follow me on Instagram at Strange Origins Podcast for updates on episodes and even giveaways, extra behind-the-scenes info on topics that I just couldn't quite fit into the podcast, and of course, those spooky memes that you've been craving since the 1st of October. So, while you're logging into Instagram and clicking that follow button, I would like to teach you a little more about the history of a pair of brothers whose interest in their country's history had a little more impact than what they were expecting. And now, on to the show. What is the story that pops to mind when you think of a fairy tale? Is it Little Red Riding Hood, who went into the woods to deliver food to her sick grandmother? Or is it Cinderella, whose evil stepsisters almost got in the way of her and her Prince Charming? Or do you think of Rapunzel, who, while locked in a tower, was told by a prince to let down her long golden hair? For me, it's all of these stories, and more. When I was younger, I had a book of fairy tales, as many of you can probably relate to, and I read and reread those stories until I knew each of them by heart. It was shiny and gold on the outside, which makes sense, seeing as a lot of the girls or children Ingram's fairy tales are coveted for their blonde hair, and inside it featured beautiful illustrations of castles, lush green forests, and the strangest collection of characters I'd ever read about. Fairy tales are funny that way. They feel like home, like stories you can tell your children, but they also feel full of the worst kinds of danger, and of the most gruesome antiheroes. In these stories, the heroes don't face small consequences for immoral actions or the disobeying of their elders. Usually the punishment is death in gruesome, varied ways that include starvation or being stuck in an oven and eaten. Sometimes it's having to give away your only child to a complete stranger because of a promise made out of desperation years ago. On one occasion, it was having 130 children in your village be led to a river and drowned all at once. Still, though, they are stories that are beloved by children of all ages for their adventure and teachable moments. Heaven knows Disney saw the advantage of using fairy tales as children's entertainment. So, who exactly were the men that collected these tales? Jacob Ludwig Carl Grimm and Wilhelm Carl Grimm were the two oldest siblings of a family of five brothers and one sister. Jacob and Wilhelm were born only a year apart, making them extremely close. This codependency only deepened in 1796, when their father Philip died of pneumonia, leaving them in charge of the future financial security of their mother and siblings. At the time, Jacob was 11 years of age, and Wilhelm was 10. Until they graduated from their school, their family was supported by their mother's sister, a first lady-in-waiting at the court of William I. They attended school and excelled, graduating at the head of their respective classes, and then attended advanced classes at the University of Marburg, where they did exceptionally well. This was partly due to the fact that they felt a responsibility to get good jobs to support their family after graduation. But it was also because students with lower social standing were more ignored by their peers. Often they would be excluded from events with other students, as family wealth and social status were seen as necessary at the time. This worked out for them, though, as they studied more than their peers and went on to excel in their majors. Inspired by a law professor, Friedrich von Savigny, they leaned more towards history and philology. In order to support his family, Jacob took a research assistant position in Paris for von Savigny, but had to abandon the position for a better paying job at the Hessian War Commission. Of their circumstances, Wilhelm wrote that, quote, "We five people eat only three portions, and only once a day." Later on, Jacob found full-time employment in 1808, when he was the court librarian for the King of Westphalia, the younger brother of Napoleon Bonaparte. Joined by Wilhelm, they were then able to support their siblings after their mother's death. They sent their brother Ludwig to art school, and when they were able to, they sent Wilhelm to seek treatment for a respiratory illness. It was during this time that they began to collect folk tales, though it was more of a hobby than a profession at the time. When they were afforded more time, they became titans in their field, collecting and publishing books on early German literature, Danish and Irish folklore, and even Norse mythology. In 1812, they published their first work, Kinder und Hausmärchen, which translated to Children's and Household Tales. This was before the term fairy tale had been created. The brothers' first version of the book included 86 stories, which grew into 210 by 1857. They then overtook positions at the University of Göttingen, with Jacob as a professor and head librarian, and Wilhelm as a professor. In 1825, Wilhelm married Henriette Dorothea Wilde, who was one of the women that supplied the brothers with stories. While it's a popular misconception that the brothers were thought to have collected their stories from those from the lower class, it was actually women from the middle and upper class that gave them a majority of their material. A lot of them were French, such as Dorothea Weimann. the daughter of a tavern owner whose ancestors were persecuted for being Huguenots and driven from their hometown. She picked up many stories from travelers who had passed through her father's tavern and passed them on to the Grimms. The brothers would later write that they were extremely lucky to have found her, as she provided more than 40 stories for them. In 1837, the brothers would be declared a part of the Göttingen Seven. They were a group of liberal professors who, at the time, protested the new King of Hanover's announcement that he wanted to change the constitution. Because of this defiance, the professors were fired from their posts. Three of them, including Jacob, the eldest brother, were given 3 days to leave Hanover. After the protests, they became famous through media attention that referred to them as heroes, and they were offered positions in 1840 at the University of Berlin, where they continued to publish and even started working on a German language dictionary. They both enjoyed a few years of retirement before passing away, Wilhelm in 1859 and Jacob in 1863. Today, Grimm's fairy tales are placed by some as third in line of the world's best-selling books, behind the Bible and Shakespeare, of course. This is in part due to the fact that the Grimms collected these tales as a way of showing off the core values of the German people, which ended up being more relatable to the rest of the world than could have been foreseen. We have Edgar Taylor, a British solicitor and author, to thank for the publication of Grimm's fairy tales outside of Germany. In the 1820s, he wrote to the brothers stating that he had translated their book to English, mostly as a way of amusing some of his friends who did not speak the language, and who ended up loving the stories. They published the English version, and it became even more popular than the German original. So, why were these stories collected in the first place? Before the internet, creating a collection of stories wasn't as easy as it is today. Researching this podcast was made impossibly easy through the use of Google, something that the Grimm brothers could only have dreamt of in their day. In the 19th century, being a historian meant asking around and finding people who were friendly and willing to tell you their stories. They then had to record it all through handwritten notes and memory. It might surprise a lot of people to hear that the Grimm brothers never actually set out to make a collection of children's stories that were meant to be read to children. That was actually the last thing on their minds when they began collecting stories from their part of Germany. Their original intention was to create an academic anthology that would foster in readers at the time a sense of pride of the history of Germany. When they had attended college and become greatly influenced by their law professor, they developed a deep interest in philology, which is essentially the study of the relationship between history and language. Jotting down stories from Germany's past was the perfect way to preserve the history of the people, and to show that their natural storytelling skills were kind of a form of poetry. Despite the fact that the brothers named their book Kinder und Hausmärchen, the original collection of tales was considered far too dark for children, and was stored away as more of a historical anthology that no one but academics would have any real interest in. The brothers truly believed that the stories would sit in a library somewhere, unread by anyone that wasn't interested in philology or German history. So how did the tales become so influential as children's stories? In my opinion, it's the fact that children are oftentimes less creeped out by bone-chilling stories than adults are. Take the story of Coraline, for instance, written by Neil Gaiman. It's the tale of a young girl who finds a doorway to another world in her new house, and meets who she calls her other mother and her other father. They turn out to be evil creatures who attempt to trap her and to sew black buttons over her eyes, keeping her on their side of the door forever. While adults are often weirded out by the story, it's children who are totally invested and entertained. They see it as an adventure, while adults see it as something sinister. The same can be said about certain fairy tales, at least before they were sanitized through the years. There was an incredible amount of horrible things that happened in these stories. From mutilation to kidnapping, cannibalism, child abandonment, and just plain old mass murder. It's also funny to note that the trope of the evil stepmother was directly caused by changes made by the Grimm brothers to the original stories. Originally, such as in the stories of Snow White and Hansel and Gretel, the evil stepmothers were actually birth mothers. This, according to a German professor who studied the brothers a century later, believed it to be because they, quote, held motherhood sacred. It makes sense, then, that they also removed certain sexual references, such as Rapunzel innocently asking why her dress was getting tight around her belly after a few of the prince's visits to her tower. Surprisingly, though, the brothers didn't mind making a few changes that allowed for more violent punishments or deaths when it concerned the villain of the story. In the original Cinderella, the stepsisters wanted so badly to fit into Cinderella's shoe, granting them a marriage to the prince, that one even went so far as to cut off her own toe, and the other to cut off her entire heel. Thankfully, the prince disqualified them based on the gushing blood coming from under their dresses. The evil stepsisters ended up having their eyes pecked out by pigeons at the end of the story. In the original Prince Frog, it's not a kiss that allows the prince to turn human again after being cursed to be a frog. Rather, it's because the girl attempting to turn him human again became so frustrated that he hadn't transformed yet that she threw him against a wall, which somehow is what made him turn back into a human. In the ultra-famous Snow White story, it's not a kiss from Prince Charming that allows her to wake up from eating the poison apple. Instead, it's because Prince Charming attempts to buy her, a corpse in a glass casket, though the dwarves will only let him have her as a gift. He has his servants carry her through the woods, and after one of them trips, the poison apple is lodged from Snow White's throat, and she awakens. After that, they end up marrying. I don't know about any of you, but I don't think I would ever marry a man who attempted to buy my dead body. That's just me, though. Sleeping Beauty has similar roots. In the original story, Sleeping Beauty, who is allergic to flaxseed, of all things, gets a piece stuck under her fingernail and falls into a deep sleep. She's placed in one of her father's castles deep in the woods, adorned in the most expensive clothing. She's found asleep by a king who wanders into the castle in search of his falcon, who then takes advantage of her while she is unconscious, and leaves, forgetting about her for a year or so. She gives birth while still asleep to twin babies who are taken care of by fairies until she is awoken by one of the babies sucking the flax seed out from under her fingernail. She names her twins Sun and Moon, as their existence is as mysterious to her as where the sun and the moon came from. It's after that that the king's wife, back home, finds out about Sleeping Beauty and the babies and plots to cook up the twins and feed them to the king. While the wife is attempting to burn Sleeping Beauty alive, her screams are loud enough that the king hears her and helps her out. Luckily enough, the cook that was told to cook the babies up had stored them away safe and well. In the end, the evil wife was sentenced to death, and the king married Sleeping Beauty. Whether that's for the best or not, I'm not really sure. I always felt kind of weird about the story of Sleeping Beauty, as it was strange to me that a prince would just wander across a lifeless body and attempt to kiss it. But the modern version really isn't too bad compared to the original when you think about it. Another story that always struck me as strange was that of Rumpelstiltskin. If you've ever wondered where the name came from, it's actually pretty interesting. According to Google, a Rumpelstilt is the name of a type of goblin that makes noises by rattling posts. It's similar to a creature called Rumpelgeist, which means rattle ghost. Germany is also where the term poltergeist originated, as geist translates to ghost and polter means to make a rumbling sound, classifying it as a ghost that makes a lot of noise during its haunting. While the modern version is pretty clean, an original version featured Rumpelstiltskin becoming so angry at the fact that the young woman guessed his name right, that he drove his foot into the ground and then pulled his other foot up so hard that he ripped himself in half. It was after the first edition was published when the brothers realized that the book was actually being read to children and not just by academics. Thankfully, they began to water down the stories. Quite a few Christian changes were made, including the elimination of one story called Hans Doom, which is about a man who can make women pregnant by simply wishing it. There's a lot of different examples of dark Grimm's tales that are less well known, probably due to the fact that they are extremely depressing. These include Juniper Tree, where a woman cooks her stepson and feeds him to his father. In the tale titled The Girl with No Hands, a girl has her hands chopped off by her own father. And one of the saddest stories I've ever had the displeasure of reading is titled The Hand with the Knife. In this story, a girl is forced to cut peat with a dull knife by her mother, who loves her three older brothers more than her. One day, she is given a sharp knife by a wood elf who has a crush on her, and she returns it to him every day by giving it to the outstretched hand of the elf that sticks out of the ground. One day, the boys find out about this arrangement and steal the knife. They find the elf sticking his hand out, waiting for the return of his knife, and they cut it off. The story ends with the elf heartbroken over the fact that he believes the girl he loved could betray him by cutting off his hand. Something interesting about Grimm's fairy tales that I didn't realize before researching them is that during World War II, Adolf Hitler praised the stories so much that the Allies during the time warned against reading them to children. Hitler's reasoning for recommending them is that he believed them to be stories about children with, quote, sound racial instincts seeking racially pure marriage partners. An example of this would be Cinderella. The heroine is seen as racially pure, and the evil stepmother could be seen as a foreigner. The prince sees this racial purity, so to speak, and chooses her, despite the riches of the evil stepmother or the stepsisters. In a way, I can deeply relate to the Grimm brothers. They too went to school unsure of what they wanted to study, only to be greatly inspired by a professor who taught them that it was okay to want to devote themselves to something that wasn't easily profited from. They worked hard at their education and took opportunities when they could to do things that they were passionate about. This led to a lot of people becoming interested in the things that they researched, though at first they didn't really believe that they would ever have an audience. In a way, this podcast is my fairy tale collection. The stories I tell here aren't really my own, but they are stories that deserve to be shared with like-minded people. People who are as interested in the origin of the spooky and the strange as I am. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode, everyone. As we near Halloween 2020, do me a favor, and don't forget to keep it strange.